welcoming Sister Jenji back for the second time today, but not everyone was here, so it's an official welcome. Sister Jenji came from London today and is the European coordinator of the Gama Kumaris. The subject of Point of Light makes me think about Jenji's sharing from December last year at the UN Climate Change Conference in Poland. And it was a sensation. We had Greta, she gave her speech, and I think many of us came to know about the Swedish teenager at that time. And I think from when I heard Sister Jenji share from that, maybe many people were asking this question, what is the point of life? Because this is a challenging time for all of us to grapple with the challenges we face today at so many levels, but this was at the climate level. And it's something we've been reflecting on as well. We need to feel an inner strength to come and deal with these things. And I know Jenji has been involved in this area for many years, and we'll maybe mention some of that today. So really it's an important question. Maybe also it's already been partly answered by the song, because you know this is a search really for something very deep and actually very touching. So really it's a big question, and really looking forward to how Jenji is going to answer that today. There will be a chance for questions, so a very warm welcome. Thank you.
Thank you, Sarah. Om Shanti.
Om Shanti.
Does everybody know what is Om Shanti? Okay. Om is the awareness of the inner being, I am. And Shanti is peace. And so Om Shanti is a greeting of peace to all my sisters and brothers. And yes, thank you for that reminder. When I come back from Katowice, Poland, after the climate change conference, on the one side, there was a sense of hopelessness that people were feeling. Because although there had been agreements made in Paris, but they weren't legally binding. And so it meant that governments were taking their own sweet time to do something about it. And the climate change scientists were all saying, it's getting to the point of too late, too late, too late. And then here was this movement started by one young teenager, and it grabbed the attention of the world. And so in a way, it offered hope for the future. And so where are we at now? On the one side, we see all the huge amount of negativity. Do I need to give you a list? I don't think so. But an interesting comment by Sister Sheila, who's one of the pillars of Cambridge. We were driving from here back to the center by the river, and she said that this is now the Crown Court. It used to be the Magistrates Court, and now it's become the Crown Court because it has to deal with high-level activities such as murders, etc. And she said, when this happened, we were a bit shocked that Cambridge never used to have things like murder. And so how come this is now happening? And that's one little tip of the iceberg in terms of the negativity of what's going on in the world. And so I'm not going to give you a list of all the things that go on. But what I would like to do is give you another list. And that is of all the hopeful things that are happening in the world. And within that, I see this gathering on a beautiful sunny Saturday afternoon when you could be enjoying the park or the boating or something else, yet you've chosen to be here at a spiritual gathering. And you're hearing things about a very different dimension to what's going on outside there. And you've come knowing that this is what you want. And it's not just this little group here in Cambridge, but it's symptomatic of what's happening worldwide. Lots and lots of groups of people everywhere, not just in the UK, but literally across the world, even as far away as China and as far away as Peru and Chile and everywhere, people have the sense of a movement forward and wanting to come to some understanding of the spiritual dimension. A phenomenon that, well, I've seen it grow from nothing in Britain, because when I came back after taking training and learning to teach Raj Yoga, etc., this was June 1969. And so today, many, many decades later, same time, June 2019. So from a time where nobody had heard about Raj Yoga, the word meditation had just come into vogue. A few people knew about Krishna consciousness and vegetarian diet. But today, you have not just vegetarianism, you have veganism. And it's a growing, powerful movement. So you have spirituality that's being talked about by scientists now. We had Brian Josephson, the Nobel laureate, here this morning, and he was here a few days ago talking about spirituality. And so scientists talking about spirituality, never mind all of us, but people like that. You have this worldwide movement of veganism, whether it's for environmental reasons, health reasons, or spiritual reasons, but it's become a reality in people's lives. And then you have this whole idea of holistic health, taking your responsibility into your own hands in terms of understanding mind-body mechanisms and knowing that the mind has a huge impact on the body. The body has an impact on the mind too, no doubt. But the starting influence is either health or ill health, depending on the state of my own consciousness, the state of my own mind. But the latest thing is definitely that now I'm hearing climate change scientists. Now, physicists are quite close to spirituality and the movement of the atom and how the power of the mind works. They've been exploring consciousness for a while. But biologists, it's taken them some time, a bit longer, but it's happening now. And people who are climate change scientists with a biological background and so forth, they are now talking about the need for resilience, the need for being able to adapt in a very deep way, and the need for spirituality. And so it's time for spirituality actually to be explored on the mainstream level, not just on the fringes. So things have changed in the 50 years that I've been sort of dealing with all of this. So where are we at now, the point of life? I think that at this moment, if I have an awareness of spirituality, then I can have hope for the future. And at the climate change conferences that I've been attending since last 10 years now, I've gone to every one of them except one. When we started talking about consciousness and climate, we had to explain it step by step by step. It didn't take too long, but you had to explain it step by step. And today, well, 2 years ago, UNESCO, the education branch of and the scientific branch of the UN, they had a stand in Bonn in Germany, and the heading on their stand was Changing Minds, Not Climate. I thought to myself, our message has gone where it needs to go. They understood what's needed. So that was something interesting. But now that they're all starting to talk about spirituality giving us hope for the future. Why? Because if we look at things on the linear level, it does not matter how many trees you plant, or even if you change to renewable energies, because things that have been set in motion we've actually gone past the tipping points. Now, there are some scientists who are ready to talk about this in public. Others are talking about it in private. And then there are also, of course, the cynics. But there are people now ready to talk about these things and write about these things in public. And so, what is it that's giving me hope for the future? The understanding that this body will finish, this body will perish, but there's something beyond the body. And that does not die, that does not perish. And I'm talking about the inner being. I would use the word soul. Some would just say consciousness. Whatever term it is you're comfortable with is fine. But that idea that there's something beyond this physical identity of mine. And so when I begin to explore that, then I begin to understand that the earth never perishes. Nature has a way of transforming and surviving and moving forward. But souls are eternal. Souls also do not perish. Nature is imperishable, goes through different stages, but equally the soul also. It goes through many stages, but the soul is eternal. And that gives me hope for the future. And that also makes me understand why it's still worth planting trees, going to renewable energy, and all of these things that we should be doing. Why? Because it's creating within my consciousness a new relationship and a new dynamic with nature, with matter. What's been destructive in our behavior has been caused by total lack of respect for nature. And the point of life, a golden rule, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. And so if I keep that as the golden rule in mind, as the point of life, to be able to give respect, but that's only possible if I have respect within myself. If I learn how to create respect within my own inner world, then I have the capacity to be able to give respect. And then in a very natural and automatic way, I'll receive respect also. And so the point of life for me at this moment is being able to live with respect, giving and taking respect, and being able to have that inner state of dignity. And so the aspect of nature and climate change and the environment is a very external expression. But if I look at what's going on, where did this whole question of the breakdown of respect begin? And it began when I lost respect for myself. I lost value for myself. Then I began to devalue nature also, and treat nature with disrespect. But not only nature, whether it's a family and the way we treat each other in a family, and sometimes it's respectful, but very often there's a breakdown of respect. But also, if you think about the way we interact with the laws of the land, simple things, driving laws, do I observe those? Do I observe the speed limit? Or do I think, well, I'm not seeing any camera there, so it's okay. What about finances? I first came across this term a few decades ago, but prior to that I'd never heard about it. Somebody talked to me about creative accounting. And you obviously know what it means. How to fiddle legally. That's basically what it means. But when I heard it, I said, what is that? So respect for laws. And if I don't have respect for the laws of the human world, do I have respect for the laws of nature? And you can see how the lack of respect within and the breakdown extends and reaches all the way outside, and we have a worldwide crisis for our planet. Let's go back inside again. What is it that made me lose respect for myself and devalue myself? And of course, inferiority complex, insecurity, identity crisis, these are the catchphrases of today's world, and not just for the young generation, but for all of us. And where you have so many different cultures mix and become a big soup, and you lose your identity, and you think you've lost your identity, how are you going to regain your identity? So a lot of these aspects of challenging issues for the self come because we've associated our identity totally with the external. How much can you tell about me by seeing this or seeing this? How much?
Took off the iceberg.
1%, 10%? And yet we make value judgments on people just on the color of this. So our vision towards ourselves is very colored by my own perception of identity, of race, of gender, of age, but also whatever I'm doing to myself, I'm doing to others too, inside out. How I treat myself is how I treat others. One of the big subjects of today is self-compassion. And so if I don't have compassion for myself, I'm not going to have the capacity to have compassion for anyone else either. And so where I judge myself on the basis of externals, that's the vision with which I'll judge everyone else also. And so this whole subject of identity crisis, because we've forgotten our true identity of spirit and associated completely with matter. And yes, this has biological life, but consciousness is not here. Yes, there's consciousness that is the driving mechanism for everything happening here, but this is separate to who I am. It's a very interesting question of association. Firstly, I identify with the body and I say, this is me. No, this is mine. It's my possession, it's not me. Our language gives it away. That, no, this isn't me. This is me. But you know, when you have a problem with your car, then you hear this expression, I'm having trouble with my brakes. Just pause. What did I say? I'm having trouble with my brakes. Probably I am. But the brake is the one in here. I'm not able to stop my thoughts, so I'm having trouble with my brakes. But that will be a mechanic that will be able to put it right. But my car has trouble with brakes, and that can be fixed by a mechanic. And I'm talking about my car, I'm not talking about this. But you can see association. I associate so strongly, A, with this possession, B, with all the other possessions around me, that my identity gets hooked into that. Somebody scratches my car and I have a big crisis. Okay, it's not right. They shouldn't have scratched my car, but it's happened. But it shouldn't be a crisis for me. I still got my hands, my feet, my legs, I have my faculties. And that can be fixed, it's okay, no big deal. But I make it a big deal because of my association. And so I've lost my value for who I am because I don't know myself. And I've got hooked into all these other things. And of course there'll be somebody with more and I'll feel superior, somebody with less and I'll feel inferior. And so I'll go through this fluctuation of ups and downs. And so there's a huge instability that creates insecurity within my own inner world. I don't know how long I have this house. I don't know how long I have this car. I don't know how long I'm going to keep this bank balance. And so if I'm stable, because those conditions are stable today, deep in myself I know that there isn't any stability there. It can fluctuate and change at any moment. And so where I'm hinged into external factors for my own self-respect, it's a very, very swing and roundabout situation that I can't control. And so I devalue myself, getting into that. Another aspect of dignity or lack of dignity is where I see that there's a discrepancy. And the discrepancy is between my inner core values, which are love, peace, truth, joy, purity, and I see my own behavior. I know that these are the values that I believe in. These are the values that I would say are most important. And then I find myself, either because of convenience or because of peer pressure or whatever it may be, but I find myself moving away from these values. Maybe I'm addicted to my anger. And so although I value peace, I can't stop my explosions. And so I lose confidence in myself and respect for myself. And so this discrepancy between what I know is right and the reality of what I'm doing in my own life drastically lowers my own state of self-respect. And then the aspect of faith. It's been found by research. And today, people believe in research more than they believe in God. It's true, isn't it? If they tell you this is research. So, where there's lack of faith in something sacred, something divine, then that also has been found by research to be a stage in which there's less self-respect. Mm. And then the worst thing that's, and currently it's on high level, very, very high level, addictive behavior. And the external is the substance addictions. And maybe because of my lack of self-respect, I start with substance addiction. But then as I continue, it lowers my respect for myself even more. And so it's a vicious circle. I started with that, but it gets worse and worse. And it's not an easy situation to be out from. And spiritual inner power is one way I know that works and brings about a change in that story. But apart from substance addictions, there's another type of addiction to my own habits. Anger, greed, ego, attachment. Think about it for a moment. I'm attached to one individual. Something happens, the connection breaks, but within a very short space of time, I'll create another attachment bond in a very similar situation. And so it wasn't that it was that one individual, the one and only, who was the hero, but it was my habit of dependency and creating attachments. And so that continues. So when I see myself caught up with these, this really, really brings me down. And the answer to all of these is spirituality. And so I'm seeing how when I get to know myself, I'm able to maintain a state in which I can value myself and feel my own inner stage of self-respect. Not dependent on what I have, not dependent on what I do, but really who I genuinely am. And nothing can then take away my dignity, because it's deep down within me. It's nothing external, so what are you going to take away? You can strip me of all those externals, but my dignity stays with me, which makes it so powerful. And so climate change, it's a very external thing, but it's going to impact absolutely every human being on the planet at some point, in some way or another. And so when things are in upheaval and turmoil around me, why are these scientists talking about resilience and spirituality? Because they know that this is what I need at the moment. This is the need of the hour. Being able to relinquish, being able to renounce, being able to reform. Now, I would have used these words a year ago or 10 years ago myself. But these are three words that are being used now by a man who's a professor of sustainability. He was here in Cambridge for most of his life, but he's now in Cumbria, I think, something like that. Anyway, so these three key words, they're not usually part of science, but they've become that now. Renunciation, relinquish, and to reform. And so spirituality teaches me all of this, and so the point of life now is, how can I maintain my inner state of self-respect? And yes, beyond that is dignity, beyond that is love, beyond that is happiness. But the first step, just to maintain my own inner value and self-respect. We found that addictive behavior very quickly changes through a spiritual consciousness. You heard this term, willpower. And very often when you're talking about addictive behavior, external or internal, like I described, we say that, you know, this individual wants to change, but they lack the inner willpower to be able to do this. And that applies to most of us, whether it's, I know I should exercise, but I don't. I know I should drink more water, but I don't. Basic things, simple things. I need determination and willpower to do the things I know I should be doing. Where do I find willpower? Which magic potion is going to give this to me? There is a magic potion, but it's not something that you drink, but it's something that you're aware of. When I go on that inner journey and learn to separate my own awareness of who I am from all the material things that I've associated with so far, in that journey of coming to the awareness of spirit and spirituality, I begin to discover that there's a strength and a power that lies within. And within our teachings of Raj Yoga, Raja, sovereign, mastery, the method to be able to gain mastery over the self. Why? Because now I understand which aspect of the inner being is playing mischief. I can also understand which aspect of the inner being can regain power and control the mind. The mind does not know right from wrong. The mind is a wild horse running here and there. It doesn't have any discernment capacity. And so when it goes off back into the past again and again like a broken record, and I tell it, stop, it's not listening. It doesn't know how to listen. But there's an aspect of the inner being which is conscience. And at the present moment, for most of us, conscience has been influenced very strongly by society, media, friends, our peers, our education, the general state of affairs, all of this. And so the conscience doesn't have the possibility of understanding things clearly or being able to impose its decision on the mind. And so the challenge is to awaken the conscience sufficiently to throw off all these external influences so that it's able to rise up above and see what's going on. And when I'm able to rise up above, then I can see that down below there's a huge amount of negativity. I don't want to be part of that. And so allowing myself to stay up above, and then if you want to take this step further, just that in itself is incredibly powerful, and you begin to control your mind. You're able to do that with this power that you're unleashing within yourself. But there's another source of power that's even greater, and that is the connection with the divine. And so Raj Yoga, yoga is union. When we have the physical Hatha Yoga exercises, the purpose of those when they started was to be able to control the mind. But it didn't quite work like that, because it's a bit like the donkey first and then the car first and then the donkey, because it's supposed to be soul controlling the body. And here we were for thousands of years saying that, well, if I learn to control the body, ultimately I'll be able to control the mind. Doesn't work like that. But if I can understand what is the mind, then with the power of conscience I can control the mind. But the word yoga itself means union. And so you're talking about two entities that you're connecting. And so soul, connected with the source of love and truth and power, the supreme, the divine, whatever term you use, and actually accessing power through my connection. And people have been able to change habits and addictions very fast in terms of, say, like cigarettes. Sometimes it's been overnight. In terms of the inner addictions, it takes a bit longer. Can't do it overnight usually. But you become aware. You become very aware that something slipped and you weren't able to manage. Normally, if I get angry, perhaps I'd say, well, that was righteous anger. There was a reason to get angry. And this is why I got angry. But spirituality says there's no such thing as righteous anger. There's only anger. And what is righteous is peace, not anger. And so can I maintain my inner state of peace no matter what's going on around me? And not be goaded into anger or pushed into anger or triggered into anger by external people, circumstances, things, whatever it is. And so to understand that I am my own master and I can choose where to go, what to do, and how to do it. And so I take that power from the source of power, and I'm able to come back to the state of mastery over the self, which of course then is going to definitely increase my own self-respect. Mm-hmm. If I see myself being defeated again and again, I don't want anger, but it comes. I can't do anything about it. I'm not managing it. My self-esteem is eroded every time I give way to anger. I'm taking anger up as one factor, but it's connected with all the other things. But if I can see myself having victory, not victory over anyone else, but little victories inside, then yes, I'm going to say, this is the right way. I'm on track now. And so I'm able to experience that state of self-respect through my own journey and my own awareness. So when I come back to self-respect, I don't need you to give me respect. But the law of karma says, if I'm giving you respect, if not today, at some time, you will begin to respect me. Might not be one night or five nights, it might be a year or two, but it does work, definitely. Just keep giving respect, because you don't ask a question, they don't deserve it, or do they deserve it? No, that's not for me to decide. What is for me to decide is, what state of being would I like to attain? Do I want to have a state of being in which I'm maintaining my own respect and dignity? And if that's what I want, it has to be manifest in a practical way in my life. It can't just be that I say, I want it. It's not going to happen just by wanting it. I've got to make it happen. And making it happen is by the practical application. If today I maintain peace, then yes, my journey of peace will lead me to my destination of peace. If today I maintain respect, then I'm going to get to the point where genuinely, truly, I'll have respect for all human beings. But also, I'll have respect for all forms of life. It's very interesting. There's, again, a thing that people are now aware of that they weren't aware of even 5 years ago. And that's the whole subject of biodiversity. Even 5 years ago, there wasn't so much consciousness about it. Today, when we hear the statistics that every day X hundreds of species are being exterminated, literally out, we're shocked. And then we begin to hear stories about what if the bees, what if the birds, what if this, what if that. And you really begin to think, what's going on? And so we realize that within our planet, within the web of life, diversity is so important. Now here's a question. Do I have the same recognition that diversity within the web of humanity is equally precious, or even more precious and more important than others? And I don't think you actually have understood this properly. Where we have all sorts of conflicts, whether it's in a little situation in a village or whether it's in a big metropolis city, you have all these tensions because of color, because of race, because of this thing, because of that thing. And we've forgotten the importance of diversity, the value of diversity, the beauty of diversity, the